Good.
The Senate E12 Finance Division will come to order. Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2013. We have three bills on the agenda. First, Senate File 1222, Senator Stump, Career and Technical Education Revenue Formula Modification. Senator Stump.
Senator Skoy has a tax committee meeting. Is it okay if he goes first?
Yes, it is. Senator Skoy, we have Senate File 177, School District's Equalization Aid Levels, Increase for Operating Referenda, Debt Service, Equalization and Programs. Welcome back to the committee,
Mr. Chair. I appreciate you accommodating my schedule. The Tax Reform Division is meeting, and we are processing bills there today.
I understand.
So I appreciate the opportunity to step in front of Senator Stump here. As you said, I am here with Senate File 177, and if I can get my folder in the right order. If you would allow me just a few minutes to talk a little bit about some of the policy and some of the thought process that has gone into this bill. Going back to the time that I had the opportunity to serve as the Property Tax Division Chair, I've always been contemplating the amount of property taxes that Minnesotans pay that is related to school funding. And over the years, I think, if my memory serves me correctly from Dr. Melcher's presentation back to 1915, Minnesota has had some mechanism for equalizing tax burdens on school levies. And so we have a long tradition of doing this, and I do understand that school levies are a significant part of the property tax burden. So as we moved into session this year with our discussions revolving around property tax relief, I think that having discussion about the school levy was completely appropriate. We have heard this bill in the tax committee. It is actually the compilation of two bills, one of which was our original levy proposal, and then we rolled that into an equalizing bill that we also had in committee that I had authored. So as we contemplate this, I do want to bring to your attention, and this is the result of discussions that I've had over the years with the former fiscal analyst for the E12 budget division, Mr. Nauman, that the Education Committee and the Tax Committee tends to look at levies differently. I think from the K-12 division's perspective, it is a source of funding for schools. But from the Tax Committee's perspective, equalizing is property tax relief. And as I learned yesterday, I should not view that as necessarily a switch to be turned on or off, but more of a dimmer that you can use to impact the amount of levy impact by Minnesotans up or downwards. And so while we contemplate this, I'd like you to consider in your deliberations the breadth of the impact to Minnesotans, and that I would hope that what we do this year would be pretty broadly based, in that it would affect not all, hopefully most Minnesotans. Part of our discussion around school levies as opposed to other forms of property tax relief is that while we are proposing to put some money into local government aids, not every Minnesotan lives in a city that in a city in general, and not all of them live in a city that receives aids. So we think that this is appropriate because everybody does live in a school district. And so we are going to bring Senate File 177 to you today with those kind of background thoughts, that we're trying to provide property tax relief broadly based across the state. The method that this would do this is to equalize the tax burden on Minnesotans. So let me start by walking through Senate File 177. And members, I do have an amendment that makes a change in the equalizing dollar. And if I think we should put this amendment on before the discussion in order so that while I'm talking about it, it's accurately reflected in the bill. And if you would like, I would describe the amendment.
Yes, waiting to get a copy of it, but please describe it, and once it's distributed, we'll add it.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, what the A7 amendment does is it readjusts some of the equalizing dollar amounts. Currently, Minnesota has two tiers for equalizing the voter-approved referendums. It's $474,000 per capita of market value for the first tier, and $270,000 per capita value of market value per student for the second tier. But so what Senate File 177 does is it removes $300 of the, or replaces $300 of the voter approved with school board approved, and these are the would be the new equalizing tiers. It would be $952,000 for the new school board approved levy, $880,000 for the new first tier, and $440,000 for the second tier of equalizing. So if I could have that amendment offered and adopted.
Senator Stumpf moves the A7 amendment referenced by Senator Scoy. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Proceed.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm happy to be joined by Senator Hoffman, who I've been working with this through the process. He also has bills that are in front of this committee with regard to equalizing. And so happy that he joined me, and I'm would assume he'll have something to add. As we look at Senate File 177, what I would like, members, if we could skip Section 1 to the end and move on into the center of the bill, and I will just walk through what we are doing here. As I said, currently there are two tiers in the school, in the voter-approved referendum school funding mechanism. This bill removes $300 of that voter-approved levy and places it into a school board-approved mechanism. This accomplishes a couple of things from my perspective. Primarily, there are a number of school districts across this state that, despite all of their best efforts, are unable to pass school board or voter-approved referendums. So for those school districts that have no voter-approved referendum, it's easy to see that there's going to be a discrepancy in educational opportunities between those the opportunities afforded those students and students who attend schools that have just the average of the voter-approved referendum, which is over $1,000 a student now. And this would give those school districts the opportunity to have the school board on school board approval levy a $300 per pupil levy to give them some new money. Now, the other part of this bill that I think is important is the part that the amendment addressed, and that's the equalizing. And as I said earlier in my opening, Minnesota has equalized school levies for a long, long time. And I think that the secret of the Minnesota miracle was the fact that we equalized school levies by reducing tax rates, which reduced tax burdens on Minnesotans. And so we have an equalizing factor that has been in place for this mechanism, has not been adjusted other than the tier change since the early 90s. And we know what has happened to property values in the intervening 20 years. They've over doubled. So the proposal before you today is to double the equalizing on all of the voter-approved levies, including the new $300 education opportunity referendum, or whatever we're calling it here, I guess. I never have been very comfortable with the name. But anyway, so I would hope the committee would give consideration to that proposal to add $300 a school board approved levy. And then the most important part in my consideration is equalizing, which is the property tax relief. Now, on section one, we propose, and to be honest with you, this was more of a second afterthought than anything else. And as I started my deliberations this year, and I know you folks have had presentations from the working group and also from Dr. Melcher on the working group recommendations. And these folks recommended that part of the school levy be rolled in. I'm trying to find it here. I highlighted it, but I'm not coming up. They recommended, a number of things. First of all day kindergarten, which I know you folks are working on, and I appreciate that effort. Mm-hmm. But they recommended reversing the regressive nature of school funding by lessening the reliance on local referenda. And they did that through a couple of mechanisms, one of which was to take off $300 per pupil unit, which would help close the revenue gap by bringing up the lowest revenue districts. And so that is why the $300 is the number that I dealt with in my original discussion. Now, as I looked at the amount of property tax relief that was going to afford me, I thought that I should be doing a little more. And there, as you know, there are a number of other equalized levies, one of which is the debt service levy. So because over 90%, probably closer to 95% of the school districts have some form of debt service levy. That also has not been adjusted for a number of years. We took a little quick run at doubling the lower tier on the debt service levy also. I would appreciate the committee's work in this arena. If you have improvements to those dollars to broaden the distribution or to improve the efficiency, I would be open to those suggestions with regard to that levy. But I think with that, I think I've covered pretty well what I'm attempting to do. Senator Halfman, did you have some comments that you wanted to add to the committee before we open for questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee. For about 20 years now, this hasn't been looked at, and the formulas haven't been adequately adjusted, and this is a great year to start looking at it. And Senate File 569 and Senate File 177 provide pathways to get there. And, you know, one of the things that we believe is that a child in a low property wealth district should have access to equal education opportunities as a student in a high property wealth district. After all, our state's constitution, remember at the beginning of the year, Mr. Nauman put up Article 13 of our state's constitution, and it's good that we remind ourselves that every child in the state of Minnesota has a right, you know, constitutional right to a free public education. So, you know, those are things that really drive this. And we want to create those equal opportunities. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I also, Tom Heidemann from the Anoka-Hennepin School Board, he is the chair of the Anoka-Hennepin School Board, is here to provide some testimony if folks would like as well to talk about equalization. Senator Skoy, if that's is that all right with you and all right with the
Yes, we chair? Have, I believe, two other testifiers. However, Senator Skoy, you'd like to proceed.
Mr. Chair, it's up to you. I think that hearing the testimony and then questions would be good. Perhaps those gentlemen want to join us at the table and
yes.
Would be helpful in answering questions.
Welcome, and if the testifiers could each state their name for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Heidemann, and I'm the chairman of the Anoka-Hennepin School Board. which is a school district in the northern suburbs of Minneapolis-St. Paul that educate 40,000 K-12 students. This is close to the 20-year anniversary of when Anoka Hennepin brought forward a lawsuit for addressing equity within the funding system in the state of Minnesota. The Supreme Court decided that that was a decision and something that needed to be addressed by the legislature first. And after that decision, there was actually remarkable progress made for equity across the state of Minnesota. If you look at what Mr. Melcher has done recently in his research, and he presented it to his task force, you will see that that equity advantage that was seen after the lawsuit has largely eroded. We are almost back to where we started. So as Senator Hoffman has stated, this is a very good time to be looking at equity. The reality is, as we've said before, is that levy used to be called excess levy. And if you look at the reality for us in Anoka Hennepin, we have $48 million of levy. And what that covers, as we had looked at what the impact would be if voters did not approve that a year and a half ago, $48 million, that meant class sizes in elementary of 40, up to the capacity and fire codes of a classroom. It meant class sizes in high school of 50, with less advanced placement courses that happened to be low incidence, because we just simply couldn't afford it. The ability to even teach science with 50 students in a laboratory setting was simply not safe. But that was the reality we were dealing with. In addition, with the loss of teachers, it opened up a number of classrooms that didn't have teachers, which meant that we could close schools, including one middle school. So that's not really excess levy, in my opinion. That's just basic programming that's required for us to be successful with our students. So that's why, until we can really fix the issue of funding within the state of Minnesota, which I'm hopeful we can do in the future as the finances improve, this is a nice way to, at least for us who are raising money for basic programming through levy, not having to pay that extra three times what other communities might have to pay for that levy. And it also makes it very hard for a lot of communities to pass these type of levies for their kids. With that being said, I also would like to remind the committee that the governor's proposal, as it currently stands, leaves Anoka Hennepin with an $11 million gap in funding for this biennium. And we basically, as a school board, are faced with three potential options. One is to cut 250 teachers and administrators. The second is to ask our labor unions for another hard and soft freeze after 4 years. That's 4 years of hard and soft freezes. And that would mean 6 years of no raises for some of our teachers. Or the third thing is to go back out and for more local levy. So we hope, as well as with equalization, we could address the inflationary pressures that we're dealing with. And this is based on a 2.5% inflation factor in Anoka Hennepin. So again, members, thank you very much. It's really an honor, and I really appreciate the opportunity to address this committee, and I hope that together we can do some good things for the children in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heidemann. Chair Heidemann.
I'll jump in. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education. I have Ray Queener with me today from Stillwater School District. But just to set the framework here, there are both segments of Senator Skoy's bill are strongly supported by Schools for Equity and Education, both the education advancement revenue and the increase in equalization. In our testimony yesterday with Schools for Equity and Education, we brought in two districts that were below the 300, and we all heard the emotional testimony and the pertinent testimony of the lack of opportunities or the that are existing in those districts. We also have, and I think Mr. Queen will show, a district that doesn't get much in terms of state support beyond the basic formula, and how they're reliant on the referendum and how they have fallen off the equalization and how this would help them. Theoretically, bringing back the general education levy would be probably preferred to the approach of the district discretionary levy, But, of course, the difference between theory and practice can be a very wide chasm. And so I think that Senator Skoy has been very open in creating a system that's going to be very, very helpful for districts both at the low end of the spectrum and in the middle end of the spectrum that have have become increasingly reliant on the referendum and are now doing that all locally as opposed to a mix of local and state aid. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ray Queener. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Mandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's an honor to be here today and share a few thoughts with you. As Tom was talking...
For the tape, re-identify yourself.
Oh, sorry. Ray Queener from Stillwater Area Public Schools.
Thank you.
Thank you. As Tom was talking about the impacts in Anoka-Hennepin, we're also looking at very similar situation in Stillwater. Our referendum expires at the end of next year, so our board is contemplating a levy question for this fall. And for our district, that's about $11 million, or about 20% of our budget. And as we articulate what that $11 million means to our district, there is nothing in that $11 million that I would call excess as well. And very similar to the numbers that Tom talked about at Anoka-Hennepin, class sizes significantly into the upper 30s and 40s at all levels. And those are the types of things that we're trying to avoid. In Stillwater, without our referendum, we rank 324th out of 336 school districts in general education aid. So it's very evident that with the referendum, we're able to at least move up to 231 out of all the Minnesota school districts. The referendum is an important tool for us. As Brad mentioned, I think, you know, as we explore the future and trying to find alternatives for education funding, right now as a vehicle for funding our public education system, this is a very important instrument. The equalizing factors that Senator Skoy talked about, Stillwater has not been recipient of those equalizing factors for over 8 years. And that's had a significant impact, obviously, to our local property taxpayers, because the entire brunt of the referendum is on the local levy. And when you compare our referendum dollar amounts to others in the metropolitan area, for a very similar tax impact, other school districts are able to generate up to $700 more per pupil for the same tax impact as our Stillwater residents are paying. So clearly there's an equity issue there that's very important to us. Very important to our taxpayers that if we're going to utilize the referendum instrument, it needs to be equitable, as been stated already. Again, as I mentioned, our board is looking at a referendum for this fall, for sure renewal, having some conversations about potentially an increase to help fund our strategic plan as we look forward to the future. And very strongly support adjustments of the equalizing factors that, again, has been mentioned, has not been addressed or touched for 20 years. I just think it's very important to acknowledge that we don't see anything in our $11 million referendum as excess. This is something that's a core funding part of our operation, and looking at 20% reduction to our budget without having this renewed is a significant impact to our school district. So very much support addressing the equalizing factors. I think making it fair and equitable across the state, independent of where you live, independent of what your property wealth is, I think is very important, and support that in this bill as well.
And Superintendent, could you comment on your student enrollment? Has it stabilized, declined, or?
We were actually, we've declined a little bit over the last couple of years. We have a huge pocket of potential growth in our school district in Lake Elmo. That's really the area that's expected to grow. And depending on the pace at which that could grow, we could stabilize and maybe increase a little bit. But generally, the last few years, we've been declining as the housing market has been more stagnant.
Thank you. Another testifier, Mr. Walseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thanks, John. Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. And I have a little illustration, if there's a page can help hand this out, just to kind of paint a picture of who we're talking about in the education advancement revenue portion of the bill. What you'll see in the map that is being handed out is a snapshot of where school districts are in terms of their operating referendum authority. And hand that out there for the members. The dark brown districts are the ones who have less than $300 per pupil in operating referendum authority. And you can see a pattern there in kind of central and northern Minnesota. Those are the students that are really, we're trying to help with the first portion of the bill, the education advancement revenue portion. And just to give a perspective, Mr. Chairman, members, that's 54 school districts are currently at or below $300 per pupil, comprising 58,000 students. That's about 7% of the state's student body. So that's really who we're really trying to benefit those students here today with that bill, with this bill. I think, you know, years past, we've talked about operating referendum and these levies being considered for extras. When I've surveyed our superintendents and our school administrators to find out what they would spend this money on, it doesn't sound like extras. We're talking about adding high school vocational classes and equipment, adding or maintaining advanced placement or college college in the schools courses, curriculum and technology support, instructional support, adding counselors, home interventionists, the kind of personnel we need to really shore up those most at-risk students in our system. Mr. Chairman, this is a really important bill for creating equity and some stability for a lot of, 7% of the student body in Minnesota that has really fallen kind of behind in the wake of the operating referendum program the last decade, and can't implore you enough to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsath. Ms. Ciccone.
Mary Ciccone, Parents United for Public Schools. I'd like to thank Senator Scoy for bringing this forward. We're very supportive of this bill. But I also have to say that it actually represents the greatest fear that the funding working group had, which was that when we placed the idea of the $300 roll in, our fear was that that would be just the only piece that was taken, or we had a location equity index. Our fear was that would be the only piece taken. It is actually a pyramid. You
and
have
Ms. Coney, for the record, so viewers know, you were a member of that work group.
Absolutely. I was a member of that working group. And for 2 years, we had an opportunity to kind of put the idea of rural and metro and urban away and just talk about 341 school districts. There's a marriage here. And I think you have an opportunity to try and take pieces of Senator Scoy's bill. We did learn. At first, we argued, is there really a regional cost difference? Yes, we had a study from Hamline, but the questions that came up, where we actually saw it, were in regional centers around the state, not just in the metro area. What school districts have to respond to is not just the price of products, but a labor market. You won't drive 30 miles to take a job as a custodian. So if you're going to have a job market in an area, you need to respond to the Targets and the Walmarts that are in the regional areas or the metro areas. What I ask is that 341 school districts have less money today in buying power than they had in 2003. You had a parent here yesterday, rightly so, in tears. I work with parents in districts trying to pass levies all over the state. This is a huge issue. My fear is that one part of the group's ideas would come forward. I think it's incumbent upon you to take a look at the whole. And I'm very supportive of this bill, very supportive of a bill to also really look at how those location equity pieces would fit in with this as well. So I just thank the senator for bringing this forward, both senators for bringing this forward.
Ms. Ciccone, Senator Scoy, and then Mr. Lundell. Or Mr. Kronquist.
Oh, go ahead. I'll wait.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And we also want to thank Senator Scoy and Senator Hoffman for bringing this legislation forward. We absolutely agree that as long as we're going to have a funding system, education funding system in Minnesota, that is dependent on local operating referendum. And make no mistake about it, we do have such a system in place now in Minnesota. The operating referendum is in place, and it funds basic needs. It does not go for extras in any district in this state. As long as we're going to have that kind of system in place, and I think we are for the foreseeable future, we need to make sure that the tax effort is fair across the state. And Senator Scoy is absolutely right. These have not been adjusted in decades. Time is way past due to do it. And so we think this bill brings forward a solid recommendation. The piece that's missing, and Ms. Ciccone pointed that out, is that the education funding group had a package deal, and the other piece would recognize another reality and another inequity in the system, and that is the fact that nowhere in the current system do we recognize the labor cost of differential. It's a simple reality. It costs more to hire a teacher or a principal or a bus driver or a custodian or, you know, you name the job, in the metro area and in regional centers than it does in other parts of the state. This is not unique to education. Whether you're talking attorneys or contractors or carpenters, there's a cost of labor differential. How we fund that now is through the operating referendum. Metro districts, by and large, do have higher referenda, and by and large, the referenda are used to pay for the higher cost of labor and, quite frankly, a much higher special education cross-subsidy. So we think we have a great opportunity to look at the recommendation that came out of the commissioner's funding group, which included the provisions in Senator Hoffman and Senator Scoy's bill, and then also included that cost differential recommendation. And we think if you do that, you got a package that's going to help every school district across the state and provide some stability as we move forward. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you, Senator Scoy and Senator Hoffman, for bringing this forward.
Mr. Kronquist, could you clarify the amount for the location equity index? There was a work group recommendation. We have proposals we're reviewing now. We know realistically there's not enough funds to accomplish everything in that work group. And we commend the work group for putting together a plan. But with limited resources, is there a number you can share with us that might fit into this equity formula as we look at One Minnesota?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, the recommendation out of the work group was actually going to roll an additional $400 off the referendum into a board-approved levy and have that be board-approved. So for any district that actually had a $400 referendum, and every district in the metro area does, it really wouldn't provide any new revenue. However, the huge advantage is that it would provide much more stability. Then that $400 per pupil would no longer be at risk when a referendum came up to be approved. It would be a board-approved referendum. So Dr. Melcher is here. I know he could. I don't have that cost, Mr. Chairman, off the top of my head, but it's not a high cost because, again, it's not providing new revenue to the majority of school districts in the
state. We'll get that as we proceed. And we have another testifier, then we'll get some comments. Yes, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lars Negstedt. I represent Isaiah. Isaiah is a vehicle for people of faith working for racial and economic equity in the state of Minnesota. And we just wanted to raise up the fact that we believe that we're all God's children, and as such, we need to make sure children are at the center of our education system. So we wanted to kind of bring that back into the debate here. We're not experts in the ins and outs of the finance situation, which is extremely complex. But we do know that when we increasingly rely on these local levies, that inequality grows, and kids are the ones that pay the price for that. So we wanted to inject that into the debate and thank Senator Scoy for bringing this bill forward and addressing that, because we do feel strongly that it's in everybody's interest for all kids to do better in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, and thank you to all the testifiers. I took notes, and I do want to address a little bit about the location equity. And let me first say that we did look at a number of different proposals. We did look at the Gen Ed proposal. We think that that would have been a better mechanism to go, but we didn't think it was something that was doable this year. If you folks think differently, we certainly would be willing to consider that direction.
with regard to the location equity, first of all, for those of you that have looked at the budget targets, this money that's being spent in this effort is coming out of the tax committee's target. It's not coming out of the K-12 division's target. If out of your target you think location equity is something that you should consider, you're more than willing to use your dollars on that. But these dollars are coming out of the tax committee's property tax relief target. That's why equalizing is so important to me as property tax relief. I did talk about the different perspective that the tax committee takes on this than the education committee takes. Why did the tax committee not consider including the location equity? I lived down in St. Paul for 5 months out of the year, and I can tell you that just about everything that I buy in the metropolitan area is cheaper in St. Paul than it is in Clearbrook. Gas, not only is it cheaper, I drive less, my food costs are less, just general living costs me less. The only thing is more, because I wear a suit instead of jeans and a work shirt. The other thing that does have more cost is housing. This is part of what's driving your labor costs. But I want you to consider what housing costs truly are. If you buy a house in Roseville for $150,000 and you're a teacher making $80,000 and you make your 25 years of payments and you retire and you sell your house, you get more money for the house than you did when you paid for it. The history of 20 years over time, I don't think it's ever gone down. Now, we had a little dip the last 2-3 years, but that's a short-term blip in the scheme of things. In many of these rural communities in Minnesota that are declining populations, and you know that is occurring for anybody who's observed a redistricting map, a teacher goes to work in one of those small towns and spends $65,000 or $80,000 for a house and makes 25 years of payments, and they sell it for less than they paid for it. It's not an appreciating asset. It's a cost. And so to include that as one of the primary drivers of this location index, I just have not bought. Now, if you decide differently and decide to include some of your revenues into that, I'm not going to stand in the way, but the tax committee was not interested in that. With regard to the excess morphing into the operating, it's exactly true. I look around, I see former school board members. I remember the early voter-approved referendums. They were called excess referendums. But this has morphed into an operating funding stream for schools. And those schools that don't have it, as the representative from the Rural Education Association pointed out, they really are struggling. And equalizing, I think, is really a good addition to that, in that it brings the state back to where we were in the early 90s with regard to this. And so I hope that adds to the discussion. Let's see, I have a few other notes. The one other thing I wanted to say. When we did this, and you will notice that there's no runs in your packet. I have never seen a run of this bill. This is the policy discussion that we've had. We think the policy is good. And I expect that you guys will do some computer runs. And I have looked at some on some various different things. But this bill that's being presented to you today, I don't know how it distributes. But internally, I know that if we go back to the equalizing factors that we had 20 years ago, it has to be beneficial for the state. And I know that the policy of having some school districts with no operating referendum because they can't pass one can't be good. So why don't you guys take a look at how it distributes? And I gave you a little flexibility in the debt service levy component, and see if we can really address the issues that these folks have brought up around the room. But do know that the money that this is being provided by is a tax committee target dollar. And it's, for those of you that looked at the target sheet. I don't know how broadly spread that was. It is an asterisk on the bottom that these dollars are out of my property tax relief target.
And Senator Squire, we recognize, appreciate it's coming from that, and you could argue it's a twofer in terms of its mutual benefit. We are looking at getting runs. They will be available. Staff's been burning the midnight oil on this, and we have the author's amendment, which was made, so there'll be some revisions to the fiscal note, but that information will be made available to members possibly today or in the very near future. We have some questions by committee and recognize that we're going to be discussing this in a great deal of detail as we get closer to our actual bill. So, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good bill in that we really need to, I think, stand up to the fact that our schools are struggling out there. I have a couple of questions, and one relates to the equalization factors. And if you went back to the original equalization factors that were in the bill, the 3,049, and maybe staff will have to answer this, but where does that 6,089 put us? Did you work off of the assumption like a certain inflation factor, or was it more or less a dollar figure that was available and you plugged it in kind of that way?
Senator Squire.
Sure. Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair, and Senator Stumpf. What I did is I, a number of weeks or maybe even months ago, I talked to Jack Paulson, who's the tax committee's property tax guy, and I asked him, I said, well, what kind of inflation and value have we had in properties across the state since this inflator was originally put in place? Was, and I don't remember if it was 92 or 93. I was just trying to look that up, but it doesn't matter. And so he calculated that the property values all across the state in all school districts have more than doubled since that time. So I just doubled the number. And I said, well, it isn't going to quite be a perfect comparison to what property values have done, but it's also something that's easier to talk about. I'm doubling the equalizing formula. And so that's where that number came from. Now, the other numbers that are in there, and that deals with the A7 amendment. Originally, we were looking at doubling the voter-approved referendum, which is what was in the bill. When we did the education opportunity whatever that ear title is, proposal, we did that a little differently, and the equalizing factor actually came out lower than which the bottom tier of the voter approved was, and we didn't like that. So we flipped those numbers around yesterday and then changed the second tier a little bit. So the first tier will be the highest equalized, the middle tier will be the middle level of equalization, and the top tier will be the lowest level of equalization. And if I'm misstating that, staff can help me.
Sir Stone.
Just a couple more follow-ups here. So there was a kind of a formula, so to speak, built into that. But I think that won't we run into this same problem 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road where we'll, and I'm not sure which way, but I assume that inflation usually will go up. So do you think that it there should be an inflation factor or some kind of an adjustment factor that would stay with it, so to say, maybe every 4 to 8 years or something?
Well, Mr.
Senator Scott.
Chair and Senator Stumpf, we had this discussion in the tax committee also, and I can't recall if I actually included it in one of my earlier versions or not, but we have had this discussion.
And I recognize that if that had been in place from the 90s, this bill wouldn't be necessary.
Senator Squire, members, I believe inflation is factored in the bill. I'll ask Mr. Arneson to clarify that.
Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Squire, this one. For example, you'll see on lines 1.18 through 1.20, we sort of set the equalizing factor nominally at $6,098, but the subsequent words there to the end of the sentence do specify that this factor floats upwards or downwards as statewide average property values per pupil unit change. So we hopefully will not run into this problem where the equalizing factors fall way behind property values.
To the staff then, but that is not the case on the education advancement or the other part, the year part, where we're just setting a dollar amount percentage of market value per capita.
Mr. Chair and Senator Square, that's correct.
And members, just so you're aware, as I said, this equalized debt service levy is not the component that I have spent the most effort on, and I was not aware that that adjustment was included on this component. And as per the discussion in tax committee, that is not my intent. And the reason for that is when we had the discussion in tax committee, while we recognized the benefits of putting inflators on formulas, we also recognized the problem of the legislature not come back and reviewing the effectiveness of those formulas. And the tax committee, I think, is taking the view that we want people to come back and look at them, and if they really truly are important, hopefully future legislators will take the same approach that we're taking today and have a good committee hearing on it and hopefully act favorably upon increasing it.
Mr. Bjornson, for the record, we have a clarification.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Senators. So just in summary, the equalized debt service levy is indexed. The education advancement revenue factor is not indexed. Right. And the referendum equalizing factors are indexed. That's how the bill reads as you have it in front of you.
Well, my intent is for them not to be indexed. And if they're not drafted that way, that will be something that I would look forward to changing in the future.
Thank you. Chairman. Senator Stumpf.
And this is my last question. MREA handed out this sheet, and I think all the members have it. I'm not sure if you have it, Senator Skoy. But when you look at the map, it shows a map of all the districts in the state, and you'll see a graph that takes us from zero operating levies all the way up to, I think the highest is almost $3,450 per AMCPU. So there's a huge variation across the state, as was pointed out when you explained the districts that have operating levies and those that don't. Does the tax committee, or do we have the ability to make the correct and fair adjustments for equity across districts and across properties when it comes to, like, I'm hoping to have a bill up in the committee here relating to the general education levy, which is a fully equalized levy. Do we have the capabilities, or is that mostly guesswork when it comes to how fair that levy would be?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, I don't know if I'm a good one to determine fair or not, but one of the ways that I would look at that is the percent of tax burden that is placed on a home to fund their school districts. And one of the ways I look at this, and I've had multiple discussions with the fiscal folks out of this committee about the appropriateness of my thoughts, but the way I view it is, if you have a $100,000 home in Burnsville or Bagley, your effort to funding schools on that $100,000 home should be comparable, and that would indicate that the tax rate should be comparable.
And so you try to equalize these tax burdens with tax rate. And if you want to lower the burden, you would lower the rate. And the gen ed levy, I think that you're discussing, brings that component into play. And if you do it on a net tax capacity as opposed to market value, you also bring some, well, it changes the formula. Some would call it more fair. Some would call it, it could be just viewed as different, I guess, where you bring the classification rates that properties pay into the factor, whereas ag land is valued at 0.5, homes are at 1.0, and some CI is at a higher number. So you bring revenue-generating capabilities into play, and you also bring into play some of the costs of services, I believe. But fairness is in the eye of the beholder, I believe.
Members, we have four additional senators that like to pose questions. Then we're going to lay 177 over for consideration. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Stumpf asked some of the questions I had, but part of the issue, you know, I'm disappointed that we don't have the runs with us, because it's just very hard to talk about these numbers without seeing what is the impact to the different districts. So having this map is good so that we know where, you know, the inequities exist. But without really seeing the numbers, I think this is the first time that I have a discussion in this committee where we talk about a formula without the tables, without, you know, seeing what it means in dollars. So I really would like to have that.
Yeah, staff's been up most of the night.
Let me answer this question.
So I think my question is related to the 6,000. I would like to know, Senator Skoy, does the 6,000 ratio that you selected as you double, you said that you double the number for of the 3,000 number on the property value due to inflation, and how does that work with those districts for whom this does not apply? Is that similar, or is this higher? So that's one question I have. The other thing is when you talk about, you know, the base market value and how you compare a house that is valued at $100,000 in your district versus a house that is valued at $100,000 in my district, that's really fair. The problem is that I have about 20 houses for every few blocks that you have. So I have a lot more houses of 100 than you do. But what you have is land. So how does that – I don't know how we build equity for places where you don't have enough homes to tax, because I think that's the problem we have. I have enough density and I have enough homes, but you have land. So could you explain how that ratio actually works of land versus property? Those are my two questions.
Well, thank you. And first of all, let me address the runs again. I've got the list of senators that are in the C districts. You won't see my name on it. I've got the map of the Brown school districts. You won't see any of mine on this. This is not a parochial issue. This is a state issue. I didn't do the runs because I know we tend to be parochial around here. I would like us to take a statewide view at this. So, to the 6,000, if you have a building in your school district and you have borrowed money from your voters through a levy, building levy, there will be debt service on that. That debt service is currently equalized at a factor of this 3,049, which is how they determine the tax rate that is on that building for the locals to pay, and then the state pays the portion above that or below that, what the local effort is. I am
just proposing to double that so that the part that the state pays would go up. And to be honest with you, I have no idea how this distributes. I know that over 90% of the schools in the state have a debt service levy. Now, it's going to be differing for differing school districts, whether you have a brand new school that you just bonded for or if you're in a 30-year-old school that you have pretty much paid off. But honest to goodness, I don't know how it distributes. And so in my discussion with the committee today, I told you this is an area that if you want to make changes, I'm not opposed to it. I just brought it as an issue. And I really, truly am trying to have a debate that is of what do we do for our state schools funding? And so I'm sure you guys are going to get runs, and you know, we all need to do that. But try to view the whole state when you look at this, if you would, please.
Good job. Mr. Chair, just to...
Senator Hoppin.
Thank you. And in addition to that, you know, when you live in Thief River Falls, to raise that $900 per pupil unit, you know, you got to tax $221. When you live in Owatonna, you got to tax $192. You live in Prior Lake, $196. You live in Orono, you tax $70. And so what these bills do is finally get to the heart of the matter and fix the statewide problem. It's kind of like yesterday, our discussion on compensatory education. You know, these are long-term fixes that we really need to have the open discussion about. And I want to thank Senator Skoy for leading this discussion. And the bills 177 and 569, and there was a third one too, Senator Skoy. I can't remember that one, but those are all getting to the options that are in front of us. And I hope we can move these on forward to the next level.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just would like to comment a little bit about the conversation we're having between – we're talking about property values. But we have to keep in mind what's happening with the land that is in districts that have more land than houses. They're mostly elderly, not children. They don't have the amount of families on the farms that we used to have. They're not so it's not just that the property is different in the districts. It's what's happening within those districts to that land. People are buying more and more land, so there's less land. It's owned by a single person. We can't have this conversation about equity without discussing that part of this problem as well. Our communities are losing families, and those are the people that work hard to get the referendums, and they're the ones that do that because they need that school. But if they can't, if we can't pass it because those families aren't there, the families that are there leave for better districts. That's why we're losing families. So please, I just would like the committee to really think about this, that there are other factors other than just the value of the homes. It's who's living in them and how it actually works practically within that district.
Could I say one thing about the land, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One way to bring the land, in the agriculture land, back into the formula, and my original bill did this, was to go to the net tax capacity component, which would then bring all of the properties back in. Part of the problem with that is part of the big plan that Ventura had took the cabins out. So when you look at that brown map, you see that strip up through our lake country that can't pass any referendums because the cabins are not included in their property wealth. Well, that costs $43 million to fix that problem. I didn't have $43 million to fix that problem. So it's more than just ag land. It's more than just CI. It's a compounding of issues. And if of anyone would like to unring the bell of 2003, I would like to do it. But I don't see how we can, so we're kind of starting to pick at the edges. And if you guys want to consider Senator Stump's Gen Ed levy bill, I think you've got one, Senator Stump. I'm not opposed to it. I kind of started down that path. I think it's a pretty heavy lift, but I think this one is easier.
Mr. Chair, a follow-up.
Senator Torres-Rae has a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, I am very interested in looking at that because I do want to make sure that we absolutely respond to the inequities that that you're talking about here. We must do that, and I have seen the level of poverty that exists in the farms that Senator Johnson is talking about. I think it's absolutely essential that we do that. I also, though, know that I have a lot of retiring constituents who are actually keeping a very small home in my district and buying very large pieces of property in your areas because Minnesota is beautiful. So there is a lot of inequity in a generation that is leaving the city, retiring, and investing in your districts, which is a great thing. I'm glad they are not going to Arizona, by the way. So I do think that that is fantastic. However, I do think that we need to review that very carefully because clearly we have inequities that we have to address. And some of these individuals who are actually living in the city don't have children. That's true. So they go and they are, you know, kind of neighbors with these families, you know, who are farming, who have young children, for whom, you know, they are not paying taxes, actually, for their schools. So it's an issue that we have to review very carefully because we must build equity in rural Minnesota. I completely agree with that.
Does anyone in the audience feel their district is being treated equitably?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Reid, this is not about rural Minnesota. It really, truly isn't. I'm joined by suburban. I think Senator Torres-Reid, when you see the runs on this, I think you're going to be pretty happy with them. This is not about one portion of the state.
Senator Bonoff, Saxhog, Johnson, and I believe there are two more. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, thank you also for bringing this forward. And it is so complex. So just a couple questions. When you talk about property tax relief and that the cost of the bill, I assume, is in the equalizing part of it, it seems confusing to me because you're saying you're going to take $300 off the referendum, but then you're giving school districts back the ability to levy that same $300. So where's the property tax relief?
Sasquatch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, back to the Ventura change, and let me start with the 415 roll-in discussion. That was all state aid that we used to buy off the bottom of the voter-approved referendum. So that $415 came from the state, went into the school district. If the school district had a referendum that was higher than $415, all of those dollars were reductions in property taxes for those property taxpayers. Zero of that $415 went into the school district. It was all property tax relief. Now, I looked at that mechanism and thought about it a while and thought, well, you know, we don't have $1 billion to spend. We have a deficit. Let me try to get there by this levy mechanism. So what happens in a school district, let's just say you have a $300 referendum. If you have the capacity to pay for all of that referendum within your school district, as some of the ones you represent probably do, the school board will have the authority to do $300 of school board approved levy on the same properties that the current voter approved is. So they will enact that levy, and there will be no change to that school district if 100% of their ability is local.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to a school district where half of their ability is local and half of it is state. They have a $300 referendum. They can't. They take the school board votes to do the new referendum. They get $150 of money from the state that becomes property tax relief, and $150 is still local property tax. So the property tax relief is in the equalizing mechanism that is over and above what the local effort can bear to raise the $300.
Okay. So,
Senator Bonoff.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy and members, this part I think is hard really to understand. But so, for example, all my districts, they are, you know, they have that $300. But it doesn't mean that they're at the top in terms of what school districts get. So, for example, Minnetonka gets, like Stillwater, I think they're neck and neck for the lowest aid in the state. So, and then they're about in the middle of the pack when you put everything in together. And all the districts that I have are just right in the middle of the pack. And they do have this increased labor cost. So, no, they don't. May not have to pay more for milk or pay more for this or that, but they do have the increase in labor costs because of the competitive nature of the regional centers as well as the metro area. And so we don't get property tax relief from this proposal, nor do we get equalization from this proposal. And so they're still in a very tough situation at the end of the day. And so I was prepared to offer an amendment, but I'm not going to because I think it's important that we just keep discussing it and as we go forward, figure out how to do it. But moving the $300 down and then letting the school district, yeah, it does give us a little help in that they don't have to go out to the voters. But our voters, bless their hearts, they've always said yes. It's expensive to go out to them. But in fact, they generally say yes. So I guess I'd still be interested in something that does address that inequity as well as perhaps another way to approach it would be to look at the cap. Because I think in your approach, you're also going to have the cap then be $300 lower.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, my proposal has the cap lowered for 1 year. With regard to the impact on the districts that you're first, I want to say don't prejudge what these runs are going to look like because some of these school districts, and I see Mr. Nauman is here, and he might be able to help me explain this if I'm not proper. So, if he's listening, some of these school districts are over levying their capacity, and this proposal will be a benefit to those school districts. So, members, I don't prejudge what these runs are going to look like. You might be surprised, and I honestly don't know how it's going to look, but I would ask you to don't prejudge. With regard to other things, first of all, there is going to be a number of other property tax relief initiatives in the Senate bill. I think there was, you know, I have hesitated to come public with what the tax committee is doing because I didn't want to be the focus of all the news reporting. But I think it was inkled yesterday that there's going to be property tax relief in the Senate bill that's hopefully going to be beneficial to your communities. This is a small component of it. I wanted to include the school levies in our property tax relief component because it's such a large part of the property tax burden of the state, and it's just not reasonable to not include that in the discussion. So there will be other things that are going to be beneficial. Certainly county program aid will be going to the county that you reside in. Now, I don't know if any of your communities get LGA or not, but we're looking at other things also. Okay. So hopefully that is. And the other thing with regard to school funding, this committee got a pretty good target, I think. And there's going to be some discussion about all-day K. I would assume that would be beneficial to all the school districts if they're offering it or not. And so I think that there are other opportunities to benefit school districts this year outside of this proposal, which I would ask you not to prejudge.
Thank you.
Senator Scoy, you mentioned Eric Nauman, our chief fiscal analyst, who served this committee for several years. He is paying close attention. I'd like him to join you at the table and offer some perspectives. Welcome, Mr. Nauman. Please state your name for the table.
Mr. Chair, members, Eric Nauman on the Senate Fiscal Staff. Mr. Cook and I are exchanging notes in the back of the room, so I'm not sure I heard the full question from Senator Bonhoff. But if I have it correct, there was a question about the cap and the language in the bill. The bill does reduce the cap by three.
No, the question was, Eric, some of these school districts that are overtaxing their capacity should benefit from this bill. So it wouldn't be fair to prejudge on what your levy amount is? Is there some benefit to this or not? Is that correct?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, the way I would think about it is pretty much uniformly exactly uniformly, according to the language of the bill, there's an enhancement to the equalizing factors on the operating referendum. So the first $300 of a school district's operating referendum is moved off the operating referendum and made a component of general education and enhanced at a much higher rate under the language of the amendment and that was the case in the original bill. It's just a little bit larger now. And then the balance of the operating referendum is also enhanced in terms of the equalizing factor. So we would have to drop this through the model to give you an accurate portrayal of how this affects school districts. But I think as a general nature, you can expect most school districts, if not all, to receive additional state aid and a reduction in the tax price for operating referenda. And that's a policy question, whether you think that's a good idea.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman, but can you address the cap as well?
Oh, I certainly can. So what if members would like to maybe pull to the work with me off the bill, it's easiest to do that. The language that governs the cap is on page 7, Mr. Chair and members, relates to the freeze. Maybe I'll come back to that in just a moment. I'm going to make sure I grab the right. So I'm looking at section 9. No.
Section 10.
Mr. Chair, you walk away from K-12 for a couple of minutes and you kind of forget where. Yes. Section 9, there is a permanent adjustment to the cap down by $300. So the way to think about the policy choice that's being made here in this section is that if a school district, when you move $300 off the operating referendum and into the new so-called EAR program, the cap is adjusted downward to accommodate that $300, so it doesn't create room on the cap by $300. And this was a experience that we wrestled with in the 2001 415 roll-in. It was a substantial discussions throughout that conference committee about the appropriate way to deal with that. And basically, we ended up as a legislature in sort of a middle ground. This bill takes the position that the Senate originally had in that year, which was to adjust the cap downward for the full amount that's being pulled off the operating referendum so that it doesn't create room for school districts to essentially levy that money back if they're up against the cap.
Chairman Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, last point then. And if we were to remove the cap, I would assume that Senator Scoy would then have a greater property tax target number that he would have to accommodate, so that would change the balance of things.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, let me just address that a little bit. I would have a concern because my goal is to reduce property taxes.
Right.
That is part of the issue that I have with some of the other initiatives that have been around here, where if you were to, do the location equity component and not reduce the cap by the comparable amount or something, that's going to drive property taxes up. And I'm trying to drive property taxes down. And so I don't want to see competing efforts in the same bill. Now, if other people have other policy discussions and figure out ways to pay for it, I'm fine with that. But I just as soon try to see if we could drive some property taxes down in this state. I think, while I don't know the status of all of the governor's proposals at this time, I do know Commissioner Franz spent the whole summer traveling the state talking about the three-legged stool and the imbalance in the property tax area. And so, hence, this is part of our deliberations this year.
Thank you.
If we're going to go in order, Senator Stumpf, I'm going to go to Senator Saxhog, Johnson, Kent, and Stumpf.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we've established that the on the Rural Education Association's graph here that the brown and the red aren't just ornery voters. If you overlay public lands, you overlay seasonal dwellings, you'll probably come up with, you know, the same concentration up in the brown and the red. So my question then to Senator Scoy is, and I think I heard you say it, is that the shift that if you were going to shift back to the seasonal dwellings would have been taken away. Is that about $43 million, did you say, Senator Scoy?
Mr. Chair and Senator Saxog, we do have you have a bill on this, and I think the fiscal or the revenue estimate is between $42 and $43 million a year.
Okay. And I was just wondering if you thought that I realize we don't have the money to do any of this stuff probably this year, given what we've got and what we're going to do. But is that something that could balance off a location factor, for instance?
Well, Senator Saxog, no, I don't know that would be a trade-off that would work, because the location factors were for the 7-county metropolitan area and regional centers were going to receive half of that. There are a number of smaller school districts in southwestern Minnesota that are struggling too that wouldn't be impacted by the seasonal rec discussion. So I don't think that would be a balancing that could occur. I met with the Bemidji School Board before session, and this issue came up. The board chair, who's a friend of mine, brought this up and asked for my support. And I told her, I said, you know, I don't know that I can support this freezing of these inequities in place, because that's kind of the way I view it. That if you can move part of your state schools to a school board approval mechanism where the rest of them are still stuck with the voter approved mechanism, I don't see how we're bringing the disparities closer doing that.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Scoy said you want to keep our property taxes down, and Senator Saxog talked about, you know, public lands and seasonal dwellings. And I think back on, and I think today the most important statement that was said by Scott Krumquist, who said that it seems like we have made up our minds that we are going to fund our schools through property taxes. And that's pretty sad, because there is such an inequity throughout the state for reasons that are just very understandable. But that's why I feel bad. I feel really sad for us to spend so much time talking about how we're going to get money for education on the property tax. And I think we should be not encouraging people to count on property taxes to fund their schools. I'm very fortunate also. Anoka Hennepin School District, Spring Lake Park, Fridley, they've been very successful at passing referendums. And I compliment the people in my neighborhood and my friends and say thank you for approving those levies, because it shows that you have such a great concern. But that's not the right way to fund our schools. We all know that. And so I hope that it's too late to do it this year to make any significant changes. But we need to start looking back at that fundamental general education money.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Johnson. I really appreciate those comments. And let me tell you, when we look at this session, and education component is going to be important, but probably the most important thing we can do is to, and we've all, this is not just rhetoric on my part, if we can bring balance to our budget going forward, so that as our economy does grow and it looks like the forecast looks pretty good, then there would be some actual dollars through the growth that we can use to invest in our schools, that we could bring the property tax emphasis down and replace that with state aid and try to bring uniformity to it. So, you know, we're all going to have different approaches to how to bring balance to it, but I think it's pretty universal that balance should be brought.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Scoy, I want to thank you for taking us on this, I think, sort of important first step back to that path. And my comments that I've been
in line with, follow very much of what Senator Johnson said. For better or for worse, I got to live outside of the state of Minnesota for a lot of years, and one of the places I lived was the great state of Texas, where it's exactly what you're describing. There is no income tax. It's all based on property tax, and it creates the absolute worst-case scenario in terms of where your zip code is what kind of education you get, and you can easily imagine the difference between what happens in the wealthy suburbs of Dallas and Houston compared to some of the communities along the Rio Grande Valley. And it was so bad that a federal judge ruled it unconstitutional and created what is lovingly known as the Robin Hood Plan, where the wealthy districts write checks to the poor districts. And if you look at the state overall, the average numbers don't look that bad, but when you dig deeper, you see a much greater difference. And it is no way to educate a state and to prepare our children and the future workforce. So I really congratulate you for doing this, and thank you. And I just think we all need to remember that we are one Minnesota, as Senator Wieger so often reminds us, and this is really important. Thank you.
Members, thank you for your thoughtful questions and comments. Senator Scoy, Hoffman, your testifiers, thank you for this very important conversation. We'll lay the proposals over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill, and we're very aware that it will go through your committee on its way to the floor. So,
Thank you. Concluding remarks. Thank you, committee members, and Mr. Chair, for this good discussion. Thanks, Senator Hoffman, for his additions to the bill and to the debate. And you know, this isn't resolved in one morning, but let's keep working on it as we go through the session. And thank you.
Thank you. It's laid over. Senator Stump. Senator Stump, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Over the years, I've always appreciated the Education Committee. I think they wrestle with some of the toughest and most complex issues, and it kind of ebbs and flows. This year, we've seen, just like the last proposal, some very complicated issues. This is one that is not necessarily so complicated, but I think it really tracks in what has happened over the last 25 years. We used to have a very strong and healthy career and technical education component to our education system in the state of Minnesota. And then in the 90s, there was a huge push to kind of get all of our sons and daughters a four-year college degree. Nothing wrong with a four-year college degree. Many of us have those. But as that push got put together with accountability, it really forced some changes in what happened to our career and technical programs in the state. And what the end result was, combined with tightening of the budgets, we saw the career and technical programs diminish. Many of them started to fall out of the individual school districts and form co-ops. Or regional career and technical places that they provided some of these courses. And then many of those regional co-ops actually disappeared as well. So what we have currently or presently is a huge demand for career and technical programs, trained men and women in our society. And in fact, some of the best jobs are unfilled because we don't have the trained people to fill these jobs. And visiting with the governor and many of our business leaders, that's exactly what's happening. So what this proposal does, Senate File 1222, is to try to encourage some of our districts to put more programs back in. And the way we do it is we increase the funding for those programs, because funding drives just about everything. What happened is we were able to hang on to career and technical as a heading in our education statutes. Sad to say, we were able to hang on to the only funding component for career and technical programs was the actual levy. That would have disappeared too, except that Senator Jen Olson, a very strong advocate, and myself, we said, you know, please, let's just keep the a modicum of funding in place, which was all levy, and that's what we ended up having. So what this proposal does is it increases the amount that can go into the overall career and technical programs, but that increase is going to be offset by some state aid. So what we end up will have actually probably about three quarters levy and about one quarter aid from the state. And so we're hoping that this will encourage districts to add new programs, expand existing programs, and many of our students that will have more opportunity, basically, to take these programs. And I believe you have a fiscal note on this proposal. It does cost money, as almost every proposal we deal with does. And I think the fiscal note is about $5 million per year. It does not increase the levy. It actually, I believe the levy is reduced. So it is kind of a trade-off, but it does put more total revenue into the career and technical programs in the state. So that is kind of captures it relatively closely. Levy is currently $15.5 million, and what it does is it increases it to 19, but then the difference between the 15 and the 19 is the aid portion that we'll be asking this committee and our colleagues to support. So, and we have some people here who are long-standing career and technical advocates, and I'm sure they have a lot more to add than I do even.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf, and welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Debbie Belfry. I work for the Bloomington School District, and am speaking on behalf of my career technical education colleagues as part of the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Educators and Administrators. A reminder for what career and technical education encompasses under that very broad umbrella is our ag education programs, our business and marketing education programs, our family consumer sciences programs, health service occupation programs, our career guidance and counseling programs, technology education programs, including manufacturing and engineering, and our work-based learning programs. So it's a broad component found in most school districts in the state. Not all school districts in the state have all of those components. But historically, it's been found by our career and technical education programs in all of our school districts that they were an early lead to helping students become engaged in their programs, leading to an extremely high graduation rate, as evidenced by data that's taken on our students in career and technical education programs. The graduation rate for our CTE students that have completed 240 hours or more of a concentrated program is up at 97%. So we do have data on that in Bloomington schools, that our trend also follows that same data for our CTE students. It's a first step in a pathway to put together an educational plan to move students on to post-secondary education through articulated credit and credit that's transcripted. And so those students can earn those college credits when they're in high school, use them as they move to post-secondary education. It's a pathway to get them to post-secondary, become engaged in that. There is also a collaboration of technical skill assessment that's done between the secondary school districts and the post-secondary school through the Minsky system, public education, to identify technical skills that can be benchmarked along the way in both high school and colleges so that students can start stacking their credentials, using those to keep moving them forward in post-secondary education and therefore leading them to either two-year degrees or four-year degrees. But we feel it's that best bridge to start that journey in our secondary programs. If we start losing those secondary programs, we do not have a first step where we're helping to engage those students in programming like this and then moving them on to post-secondary education.
Thank you, Ms. Belfry. Yes, and please state your name for the tape.
My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and I think that Ms. Belfry has covered the waterfront pretty well, but I would mention to you that in terms of ag education, which is more my specialty within the CTE, that over the years, the amount of this CTE financing has taken up about 25 to 30% of the total funds that have been supplied through the CTE levy or in past years in terms of appropriation. Ag education has got one of the larger CTE programs in the state. We have about 190 different high schools that have got these programs. There are a number of reasons in which the costs associated with CTE programs tend to be higher than they are with a number of other kinds of education courses as such, one of which is a safety issue. There are a lot of courses that are in CTE, ag education as well, that and I'll give you an example of something like farm mechanics is an example that would be a course that to get too many students in a classroom would become a safety hazard. And so you tend to have lower student ratios with CTE courses in many cases. You also have higher costs for laboratories because there's a lot of them that do involve additional equipment and laboratory areas. And so that's some of the reason. We've worked for a number of years, very piecemeal, I think, as Senator Stumpf has indicated, to try and buttress this area of education. And unfortunately, over the years, it seems we always were a little bit short on the table in that we were able to put language in. As an example, within the statute, it says that 35% of reimbursement would be from the state in a sense. But in fact, we've never reached it. And so the dollar amounts, I think if you look throughout the budget, my guess is, I haven't looked at every piece of the budget, but my guess is CTE is the only area of the budget that I can think of where the funds available through the levy are less this year than that they were in the last biennium. The last biennium, I think it was over $17 million available, and this year it's 15-something, and then I believe the following year it goes down another $2 million, and that was because of caps that were put on the property tax levy by the legislature. And so we're actually declining each year, and yet the statutory requirement is far above that. And so this bill helps to take care of some of that.
Thank you. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, thank you for bringing this forward. I'm a strong believer in this as well. And I'm wondering, do you think if we do this that it would be possible for our young people to get a certificate? I know you talked about the pathway to the two-year programs and the four-year programs, but some of these programs are really one-year certificate programs. I'm wondering if you think that we could actually confer these certificates upon our high school students so they could leave high school actually prepared to go into the workforce with some credential.
Ms. Belfry is nodding in approval. Yes, for the record again.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonnoff, we actually are in a position right now where we look at those certifications that students can start earning in high school. First responder might be a common one that you would be familiar with. There are also now some online opportunities for students to be able to pick some of these certifications up online while still sitting in their high school without having to move to a different location. Pharmacy tech is one I can think of. Medical terminology is another one. But we are working to try to encourage students to earn those certifications while they're still in high school so that it helps them understand that you can do this in steps and that it will move you on to post-secondary education. So we look at a lot of those opportunities across all of these program areas to find those types of opportunities to offer to students in the secondary schools.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I was in another committee where we had a different person at the chair. In any case, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonnoff, I just wanted to mention to you, too, for instance, our ag ed programs, not a certificate as such, but in our ag ed programs, about half the students go towards career and technical kinds of a program, like a two-year or something like that, and the other part end up in a four-year college, and the University of Minnesota being one of the areas that they go with the College of Agriculture. And we do have, for instance, in ag education, a number of high schools that offer the college and the schools program, which wouldn't be the same thing, but it'd be a similar opportunity. And it's in plant science, animal science, and I believe we're in natural resource science as well, and where they do get college credit, at least, for taking the courses in the high school.
Is there anyone that would like to testify in the audience? Yes, Ms. Salzweiger. I believe Senator Dames, did you have a question as well? Oh, okay. Yes, Ms. Salzweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. We thank Senator Stump for bringing this legislation forward and former Senator Jen Olson for her passion on this, because when we're trying to help students close that achievement gap, one of the best things you can do is put them in a situation where it becomes more relevant. And that's what career and technical does. There are a number of kids, I think, that have been saved because of career and technical programs, because they feel that the regular school system where there's testing, the paper, pencil, math, reading, everything is, you know, let's get these courses done, isn't as relevant to them if they have a career and technical program, such as the courses that and the occupations that were discussed. Also, I think that there are a number of students who don't have hope where they are right in their life right now, but yet they can see the possibility of them having a career, such as going into the medical or health profession, going into the labor workplace situations, that they can pull themselves out of wherever they're at, see that they have a lot of value, and there is a profession that they have a goal to reach. And so career and technical is so important for student achievement, graduating, and having hope at the end of their high school career. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salzberger. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair,
closer to the mic, please.
Whoever can answer the...
Senator Johnson, a little closer to the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, and whoever can answer this, do we offer PSEO to the technical schools? Do students from like K-12 go to technical schools for training like welding and so forth?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, one of the people that has been quite involved in my area is a person by the name of Murray Turner, and they have I'm not sure exactly, but I'm guessing about 20 high schools that they work with. And they do work with a lot of colleges and universities. I think one of the colleges they work with is Normandale. Several of them up in, throughout the Northwest area. And that is done online, but they have I suppose you'd call them a proctor in the in the secondary classroom. So those are online career and technical programs that they get both high school credit for and college credit for. And his graduation rate, and I just looked at it, was I think even higher than, I think it was in 97, 90 plus percent.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I'm thinking of like the Anoka Technical School over in Anoka. So could the young people go there for car mechanics and get college credit if they're like from Spring Lake Park High School?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, that's kind of a unique school. You know, that college, that technical college, was actually scheduled for closure.
I know.
And then with the help of the Anoka School District and the community, the high school actually has made that almost like a regional career and technical school. I don't know if all of the courses, somebody from Anoka probably could.
Superintendent Carlson, maybe?
Superintendent, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I hadn't intended, obviously, to testify this, but it's a huge issue to us. And no, not all the classes do get college credit there. My goal would be to do that. To me, we're in a poor area. We have the lowest per capita income in the 7-county metro area. Our kids can't afford to pay $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 to go to college. We need to get 1 or 2 years in high school of college credit. And to me, the certificate is not enough because this is not going to help them through their life. They can't afford to get a certificate and then go back and spend 4 more years in college. I would argue they need to get college credit while they're taking the career tech classes. Really appreciate the efforts that they're doing. And the more we can do that, we're working with MNSCU to trying to get as many of those courses to get college credit as we can. That's slow, hard work, but that's our goal. We'd like to have, we had 140 students last year, graduating seniors, save our families $10 million by getting college credit classes while they were still in high school. That's the only way a third of our kids are going to make it. That's 1,000 graduating seniors every year. It's the only way they're going to get there.
Hmm. Mr. Chairman,
yes,
just to kind of touch or add to that, Senator Dahl, I believe, has a proposal that is an effort to bring MNSCU and our secondary system closer together. And I think this committee has had a long history of trying to encourage the relationship between post-secondary and secondary. And it's a difficult challenge at times to do that because, you know, the systems of education have just kind of always been kind of separate. But I do think what's driving this push is two things. One, the cost, as Mr. Carlson mentioned, Superintendent Carlson mentioned. The other is the actual necessity to have a better relationship so that students have a more seamless path between, you know, the secondary and the post-secondary. And I think the goal would be wouldn't it be nice to, upon graduation from high school, if students did have a certificate and then they went on to additional post-secondary education and actually got an AA degree or whatever. And so I think there are some things for this committee to look at and shoot for that would really help our young men and women.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Belfry, I'm a little bit confused because we did pass the expanded PSEO legislation that Senator Olson carried that allowed our 10th graders access and changed the grade point average. And so now it sounds like, because it was my understanding that they could certainly go to our technical college for PSEO, but it sounds like there's a problem with regard to credits. Can you? And so it seems like that needs to be addressed. That was certainly not the intent of the legislation. The legislation was to do just what you thought, and I thought it had accomplished that. So now it makes me concerned.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I'd reiterate that.
And ahead. Senator, there's also a provision for articulated credit that has been in place for career and technical education programs. So if a student, I'll speak from Bloomington, goes through an intermediate school district as a stepping stone to be on a college campus, taking high school courses, those courses lead them to a college credit at the same time in many of those programs. Obviously, if it's an introductory course, that would not yet align to a college credit, but by taking the introductory course and the advanced course, that could lead them to that college credit. So that is one model where they are earning the college credit in high schools in the metro area through intermediate districts. As the senator mentioned, there are also cooperative districts that work on articulating credit, which when the student enters a post-secondary institution, that articulated credit is used in a particular program as a designation that the college makes. And so, therefore, it may cut the number of credits needed to move to that two-year degree. So, for example, some of our students are earning articulated credit through Normandale Community College. When they get to Normandale Community College, if that's their school of choice, when they enter, they now have those recorded on their transcript at that side. So, yes, in fact, that does occur. Some of it's a little confusing with the words on understanding of articulated credit as well as PSEO opportunities.
Thank you. And members, this will definitely be recognized for possible inclusion in the bill. We know it provides hope, and there's a laser focus on jobs, college career prep. It says it all. And Senator Stump, we appreciate your legislative career devotion to this issue.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Dames, if you'd like to
thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment more than a question. I just want to thank Senator Stump for bringing this bill forward. As Senator Wieger, you and I have talked about, I think one of the real issues we have in education is the lack of exposure of our students to these career technical programs. And I think that this bill certainly starts bringing that opportunity forward, that our students will have more exposure and more opportunities to participate in career technical programs. And I think that that's the direction we need to go. And so I thank Senator Stump for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator, and testifiers. Senate File 1222 will be laid over. Next, we have Senate File 978, Senator Torres Ray. And members, many of us have heard this bill and debated it. We're going to lay it over for possible inclusion. There will be ample opportunity for discussion when we roll out an omnibus bill the week of April 8, 9. But we can ask questions, and to the extent that we can't get done by 11, we'll meet at 5 p.m. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I am going to do my best to kind of give you a brief overview, and then we will stop, you know, wherever you feel you have more questions. So I'm going to kind of quickly go over it, and then we can come back to it. Members, this is the education policy bill that was proposed by the policy committee. We had wonderful discussions. I think that overall we came up with a proposal that is bipartisan. There are some provisions in here that we had to bring really the discussion about two or three times in order to bring consensus and put some pieces in here that really address the concerns of members. So before you, members, you have about this bill reflect about 12 proposals that came before the policy committee. One of the most important ones being the education policy bill from the department, Senate File 978. We also have a provision in here for school lunch aid programs, And I want to make sure, members, I believe that you do have some cost projections related to this bill. So you will hear these costs that are associated with this in depth when you bring your bill together. So the focus of my presentation really is on policy and not, you know, on the funding. Because that the funding associated to that policy will be up to you. You will make a decision as to whether or not those programs will be funded. So this is only the policy provision. We have the compulsory school attendance age change. We have teacher licensure or renewal mental illness in children and adolescents. We have mental health education curriculum in school districts. We have school districts save levy proceeds use of funds for mental health services. We also have a proposal to create to provide additional funding and approve a recovery program for chemical dependency. We have a proposal for an adult high school diploma requirement, compensatory revenue use for early childhood education efforts and parental outreach authorization, assessments alignment with the state academic standards and career and college readiness. We also have career and technical education advisory task force establishment, and then the transportation for homeless students. So Article 1, if you members would like to walk through it, maybe it will be easier if we go through the bill. Mr. Chair, if that's okay, I don't know how much I presume, you know, obviously you want us to go
well, let's hit the highlights and recognizing that most of us have heard it. So.
Right, right. Yes. So I'm going to go quickly through to articles, and I have both the department and our staff here to respond to these questions. So we have in Article 1, Section 1, minimum instructional days. Section 2, post-secondary enrollment options, transportation. Section 3, we provide the definitions for these transportation. Section 4 is the recovery program funding, which will be up to this committee to approve. Section 5, we have the definition of the recovery program. Section 6, we have, the recovery program definition. Section 7, we have general education revenue that will be allocated for if this committee decides for the recovery program. And Section 8 and 9, the same issue. Section 10, we have the basic skills revenue to include programs designated to prepare children and their families for kindergarten. Section 11, we have the basic skills revenue district allocation. Same thing for Sections 12 and Section 12. Section 13 to 16 clarifies the charter school pupils are subject to the truancy provisions that are currently in law. Section 17, it appropriates the money for the recovery program aid and costs training for on positive behavior intervention. Article 2.
Excuse me, Senator Torres. Members, any questions on Article 1? And for viewers, this is posted online. It's available, you know, through the process for transparency. And so any of the specific language for each section is available for you to see. And, again, we're going to go through further review as we look at what's ultimately included. But any questions or need for clarification at this point on the first article? By members or by department representatives or anyone else? Okay, please proceed, Article 2.
Article 2, Education Excellence, Section 1 increases the compulsory attendance age to 17. Section 2, the withdrawal from school and amends the age for the process for withdrawal. The Section 3 and 4 describes assessments of performance. Section 5 has the definitions creating the statutory definition for academic standard and moves existing definitions of benchmark, credit, elective standards, required standard, and school site. Section 6 describes educational expectations and graduation requirements for our state students. Section 7 required academic standards continues. Section 8 describes the benchmarks. Section 9 describes credits. Section 10 describes planning for students' successful transition to post-secondary education and employment. Section 11 describes the education planning and assessment system program. Section 12 includes changes to the Gifted and Talented Students Program. Part of the this is part of the department's recommendations. Section 13 speaks to mental health issues, requiring schools and districts and charter schools to provide mental health instructions for students, grades 6 to 12. Section 14 is the statewide testing changes. So we're doing changes to change obsolete language and then sets the graduation requirements to attain required academic standards and college readiness benchmarks, take achievement and career and college readiness tests in math, reading, and writing, engage in age-appropriate exploration and planning, acting and career assessments, describes expectations, directs the commissioners to consult with state colleges, and it requires districts to use career exploration elements. This, Mr. Chair and members, is a really significant significant change in the sense that we're really trying to move in a direction of really connecting the high school experience with post-secondary experiences and really figuring out how students are, how do we assess the students' capacity to graduate and also continue with this transition is perhaps one of the most important things that we will do this year. In Section 15, we describe the state and local statewide and local assessments results for the purpose of implementing adaptive assessments in reading math to students in grades 3rd through 8. Beginning in 2015.
Excuse me, Senator Torres-Ray, I had a question of the department. When will we have a fiscal note on the testing?
Mr. Chair, members, I know that that is something that our staff is working on. Dr. Melcher is here, as is Assistant Commissioner Herman, so they might be able to shed a little light on that, but I believe we're expecting it.
Yeah, it's just an estimate. I assume we have to book something. And
Mr. Chair,
we'll get back to that.
Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner Hermitz is actually going to go get our assessment director, who's also here, and she'll be able to speak to that. She was out in the hallway taking a call.
Okay. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 16, we have educational accountability and public reporting. Section 17, it requires the school performance reports. Section 18, it's, again, part of the department's bill with respect to license and rules, allowing teachers who are renewing their continuing license to include onset of – no, this is not the department. This is Senator Dahl. Sorry. We have several issues, several bills that are incorporated in here, but this is Senator Dahl. Charter schools, Section 19 establishes the primary purpose of charter schools in improving pupil learning and student achievement, clarifies Section 3. The authorizer clarifies that the applications approved by the authorizer are this is obsolete language.
And, Senator Torres-Ray, I believe that we do have the testing, the psychonutrition expert, and we're welcome back to the committee, and I had posed when will we get the fiscal note for the implications for Senator Dahl's bill?
Sure. Thank you. Jennifer Dugan, Director of Statewide Testing for the Department of Education. And we are actively working on that fiscal note, and depending on when information comes into us, we will certainly be able to provide that back after the recess. But we are actively working on that. I don't think I'll have that for you in the next 24 hours before you break, though. So I apologize.
But soon after the break.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. Dugan. And I noticed Senator Torres Rey on the charter schools as an example. I know that many of these items are works in progress until we finally pass it, and there will be some amendments that we're not going to offer today, but just to let people know, we encourage discussion, especially if there's something that has been discussed and you feel there might be some middle ground on an issue, to continue that. So just to let people know, I'm aware of different amendments that will have a chance to be presented at a future time. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And all of these, you know, subdivision 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 11, 14, are related to charter schools. And the issue that you bring up was, I believe that we will entertain, I don't know when, an amendment to a bill that is separate from that. Senator Bonhoeff had presented an idea for low-performing charter schools and a plan to figure out what to do with that. I believe that there was we still had some conversations going about, you know, the plan that schools and districts have to put in place, because we, for the most part in the committee, we supported the idea that, of course, we need to do something about low-performing schools, but we hadn't had enough time to really think about, well, what do we do with the kids after we close those schools? So I think Senator Bonhoeff has been working on that, and when you know, the chair is ready, we will talk about that specific. But as the only amendment that I understand will be coming before this committee, I'm not aware of any other amendments to the language that was presented by the department. Let's see. Lease space is also related to charter schools. So I think all of these, most of these divisions are related to your bill. But so all of that is related to language related to charter schools. Section 20, establishment of a flexible learning year program that allows a consortium of school districts to use a single application and evaluation process when applying to the commissioner for permission to enter into a flexible learning year program. Community involvement speaks on issues related to Indian education, section 21, working section 22, 23, are issues related to work that needs to be done with tribal nations to have a better connection with those programs and really work on education of Indian children. Let's see. Section 26, we have a Career and Technical Education Advisory Task Force that was presented by Senator Nelson, in order to really look at the future of these issues and how we can make a better effort to increase career and technical education efforts in the state of Minnesota. And Section 3, it's also part of the department's bill, correct? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, yes. Article 3 is all language that was from the department's bill. I did send a document to the committee staff yesterday that kind of highlights what sections of the bill are from the department's policy and technical bill. So I'll work with staff. I don't believe it made it into your packets today, but I'll work with staff to make sure that you get that, so it's clear to you which of these sections are from MDE's bill. But All of Article 3 are statutory changes that are being requested to come into compliance with newly revised federal IDEA Part C regulations, and these are regulations regarding early intervention programs for infants and toddlers with disabilities. These federal regs were adopted in September 2011, and states have until July 1st, 2013 to formally align those policies with the new regulatory provision. So all of Article 3, with the exception of Section 12, are statutory changes that are being requested to come into compliance with those new regs. Section 12 is some updates to the Part C mediation process that takes place. It's just to kind of clarify some timing issues, and then also to clarify that if the parties do reach a mediated agreement, that agreement would be binding in a court of law. We're hoping to have an amendment worked out with the advocates on this. They had a couple concerns about how the language was stated, but we're all on the same page. So when this bill does finally get to the point where you're ready to take amendments on it, we'll have that prepared for you.
So, Mr. Chair, that article is basically a technical corrections, most of it. Then on Article 4, we have in Section 1 a proposal to increase lunch aid to the districts. Obviously, that will be, the decision of this committee. Article 5, we have early childhood education and standard high school diploma for adults that directs the commissioner to adopt rules for providing a standard high school diploma. And then in Section 2, the proposal to increase funding for early childhood scholarships, which, again, is going to be before this committee soon, so that it will be up to this committee to decide whether or not that will move forward.
Very good summary, Senator Ray and staff. Are there questions? Particular areas that you'd like to get more information on or background before we go further at this point? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Yes, please.
Thank you.
Approach and state your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm from Brooklyn Center. I think it's dangerous to get government involved in early education, babies and toddlers, and we're going to go along with what the federal government wants us to do. I don't think we should do that. I think that $8 billion a year is more than enough for schools. I think to reduce that, we could just teach academics and some technical classes in high school and get rid of extracurricular activities, especially sports. They can be handled by professional sports or nonprofits. Schools don't have to take care of sports for children. And then why not have school a couple months during the summer and take off a couple months during the winter? Children could walk to school. We wouldn't need the buses as much. I think that's a good policy change. Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing your perspective.
Thank you.
Is there any other one in the audience that would like to address us on the policy bill? Not. I'd also like to thank the committee administrator, Brad Kelly, for his work in putting this together. And if you haven't met on the fiscal budget committee, that's Mr. Kelly, new in our staff team. And if there's no further questions or comments, we'll lay the Senate File 978 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Senator Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
And members, next steps, when we return, we will continue to review proposals that have been requested for hearing, and the week following, we're on track to have our omnibus bill rolled out, and we'll have anyone that has wanted to meet. I've had that option available since the beginning, but we'll talk more about the some of the specific provisions. We had, I thought, a very spirited discussion earlier today on Senator Scoy's proposal and then the whole concept of One Minnesota, but that really is going to be our challenge as we
decide how we will allocate limited resources and how we will provide the most equitable opportunity for all Minnesota students. In addition to those funding opportunities, we have a number of new initiatives to consider. And if there's amendments on particular policy provisions, I again encourage you to please talk to the author that may have had the provision that is now in one of the omnibus bills that is ultimately going to be merged or is set to be merged. Talk to that person if you can. We can certainly have the discussion at committee, and we will, and on the floor. But we have found on at least a few occasions where we've been able to improve proposals and reach consensus. So, again, I offer that as a great option to try to build teamwork to the extent that we can. Any questions from the committee at this point? Senator Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to share this because while I was presenting, there is a young girl in the audience who was listening very attentive to the testimony about eliminating extracurricular activities, and she asked me if we were going to eliminate band after. And so she was very worried that we may eliminate some of the important programs for children after the testimony. So I assured her that we are not going to do that, that we're going to continue to invest in extracurricular activities, and we're not going to take away funding for those activities that are so important to our kids.
Well, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for reaching out. And would that be you? And I see you're accompanied here, but if you'd just like to tell us who you are, and we're very honored that you're here today, and just to say who you are and how things are going, and go right to the microphone. You'd be one of our youngest testifiers this session. So you never know what the day's going to present.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Just, I apologize for interrupting. That is my niece, and McKinsey is going to join me today and chattel me today. So she is here, so we appreciate the opportunity.
Uncle, you go to the table as well. Okay, Senator Dames is going to join you, and we welcome you to our Capitol, and if you'd like to state your name.
My name is Mackenzie Alders. I go to Kaleidoscope Charter School.
Great. Where do you live?
Rogers.
Okay. And maybe Grandpa would like to share a couple Uncle Dave's observations.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. That is an opportunity to have Mackenzie here today so that she can observe how the process works at the Capitol and how legislation is done and how we do things that affect education, hopefully always positively. And so we decided today would be a good day for McKinsey to do that. So McKinsey's here with us today to kind of observe this committee, a couple of other committees, and we'll be observing what goes on at the Senate floor session. And McKinsey, if you'd like to just talk a little bit about what you're involved in school and what your favorite sports are and your hobby with your horses. Maybe just a few seconds here, a minute or so, and then we need to.
Okay,
well,
Mackenzie.
I'm a swimmer, and then at school I do choir and band, and I barrel race.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing part of your life with us today, and I know how proud your Uncle Senator Dames is. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And members, there being no further questions or business, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Are we going to come back at 5?